The more you learn about how products are made and who makes them, the more you may make choices to keep your dollars out of the hands of companies that exploit workers, despoil the environment, or otherwise act like bad citizens. You can, in essence, vote with your dollars. Our next guest offers a lot of guidance in this regard. Jane Mossbacher-Morris is the author of Buy the Change You Want to See. Use your purchasing power to make the world a better place. Jane Mossbacher-Morris is the founder and CEO of To the Market, which is all about putting ethics into purchasing. The company connects retailers, consumers, and corporations to ethical suppliers. Jane, thanks for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange today.
Thank you for having me.
So give us a bit of backstory, if you would. What started you on this path?
You know, if I met myself 10 years ago and I told myself, hey, you're going to be in the fashion industry, I think, I don't know what I would have thought, because I actually started my career working for the U.S. Department of State in counterterrorism. So completely different path. And I was traveling and working around the world. And in doing so, I kept hearing the same message over and over. And that message was the dignity of work. And when I began to study industries that were really thriving in the developing world, certainly agriculture is the largest, but the second largest industry in the developing world is actually described as the artisan industry. And I really thought that there was more opportunity to meaningfully connect all of the incredible products that were being made around the world to U.S.-based retailers, brands, and corporations to create a more transparent supply chain. And that's really what sparked at the beginning of the journey and the inspiration ultimately behind the book, Buy the Change.
You open the book with a story about an anti-trafficking mission with Cindy McCain, the wife of the late Senator John McCain. What was that mission about?
Well, after I left the State Department, I had the pleasure of going to work for the McCain Institute, specifically for Mrs. McCain. And my focus was really around human trafficking, and that included labor exploitation. So when we think about human trafficking, we often think about sex trafficking. That's the part of labor trafficking, or the part of human trafficking, rather, that may get a bit more discussion. But labor trafficking is actually a part of human trafficking as well, and it really is the worst form of labor exploitation. And so I had the pleasure of traveling around the world and really learning about what countries are doing to help stamp out essentially modern day slavery, including having the pleasure of traveling with Mrs. McCain in India.
So this book is clearly for people who say, I want to help and don't know how, and you show them. And you also show the amazing purchasing power that Americans have collectively, and point out further that the individual purchases we make don't have to be big to make a difference.
That is absolutely true. I think many of us may feel like we're just one individual and we may be on a tight budget, and perhaps we think that there's not much we can do. And this book, I think, helps highlight that every single person's purchasing power matters, and that there are inexpensive and often free ways to be a more conscientious consumer and have a positive impact on other people and on the planet.
Now, clearly anybody can follow the advice on our end, but you also focus on the women on the distant end of our transactions. And it's really interesting. It's largely women you're focused on.
Well, what's interesting, and I certainly didn't know this, is that the artisan industry, and actually the retail industry, including the manufacturing that is in sort of traditional stores, is dominated by women. It is an industry that women fully participate in. And when I began to understand how oftentimes women owned and operated facilities, so factories producing products, were being overlooked and I think undervalued by traditional brands, retailers, and corporations, I realized that this business model could provide value for not only the investors in my business, but all the way down to the women who are actually participating in the supply chain.
And it's interesting, too, because as you point out, money alone, before anything else, adds a lot to women's agency in other parts of the world.
It is tremendous. It is so critical that I talk about the importance of women, particularly in communities where they may not be viewed equally, women's ability to earn, to inherit, or to share an income is critical to their ability to make choices over their life. Because without access to capital, they ultimately may be at the whim of someone or something else.
And you describe a rather grim cycle of trafficking in India, for example.
Indeed, so many of the survivors that I have met describe their vulnerability, and it's very clear to me that their lack of access to capital, so a dignified job, it makes them that much more vulnerable to being tricked, to being exploited, to not having the resources to escape once they may be trafficked. And so providing alternative income-generating opportunities is a critical part of stopping that cycle of abuse and exploitation.
Are there any numbers, particularly on the sex trade, about how many people have been able to leave that trade because they've found income other places?
It is so hard to track human trafficking, and it's actually a huge shame because I think we have better data on arms trafficking and drug trafficking than we do on the trafficking of human beings. But there have been some real investments by both the governments and private nonprofits who are trying their best to better articulate quantitative data associated with human trafficking.
All right, we'll come back and talk more with Jane Mosbacher Morris about her book, Buy the Change You Want to See. And we'll talk more with her and take your phone calls and emails if you'd like to join us when we return in 1 minute. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley, and we're talking about conscious consumer choices to try to make the world a better place for lots of people living on it, not just for us and salving our own consciences, but also seeing if we can buy products that actually help people rise out of poverty or otherwise avoid exploitation overseas. Jane Mosbacher Morris is the author of the book, Buy the Change You Want to See. Buy the Change You Want to See. Use your purchasing power to make the world a better place. You can join the conversation on the exchange with your thoughts on how to vote with your dollars, in essence. 800-838-3760. By phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. We've been talking in general terms thus far, Jane. I want to zero in on a company doing good work at the producer end. Talk about the Sari Bari, if you would, and what they're doing.
Sari Bari is an amazing social enterprise based in Calcutta, India, on the outskirts of one of the largest red light districts in the world. And I had the pleasure of first visiting Sari Bari when I was in India with the McCain Institute, being hosted by a massive anti-human trafficking nonprofit called the International Justice Mission. And I remember very clearly walking up the stairs to Sari Bari, which I had been told was a social enterprise employing human trafficking survivors. And I remember when I walked in the door and saw women sitting on the floor or sitting on stools sewing, it was such a stark contrast to me to the energy that I felt visiting other locations, because I really felt like the women had so much energy, they had so much pride in the work that they were doing, and it really cemented in me how important the dignity of work is, period, but also how transformational the dignity of work can be for people who have suffered an extreme form of trauma.
You know, you point out we are not alone as consumers. There is a recognition, obviously, elsewhere in the economy that things need to be done perhaps better than they have been in the past. There's the pre-existing acronym CSR for corporate social responsibility. But how do you tell as a consumer true corporate social responsibility from good PR?
That is such a great question, and one that I am excited more people are asking, because I think it's forcing corporations to make sure that they are putting their money where their mouth is. So one of my recommendations for really understanding what businesses are doing is to first pick an industry or a category that you would buy as a starting point. And I say that because if we try to research every industry, every type of product, it can feel overwhelming. And ultimately, much like doing an extreme diet, we might end up giving up. And so instead, what I recommend is picking a category you really care about. For me, I work in the fashion industry, so that's going to be clothes. But other people might really care about the coffee they drink, the vegetables they buy, the chocolate that they buy. Pick an industry and begin to research different players. More and more businesses are writing truly robust descriptions of their sourcing practices. They're seeking third-party certifications, which I think are so powerful. And by reading about those, I recommend picking just a handful of businesses that you believe reflect your values and deciding that you're going to commit to spending money with them and start with that one category.
And in fact, the category that you start with is monogrammed products. As you mentioned, you're familiar with the fashion industry, so a logical place to start. Is that a real growth area, getting your monogram on a bunch of things?
When I started researching customization, I really didn't understand how far back it goes. This idea of, you know, where did the idea of a monogram coin come from? Having the profile of rulers on the back of a coin, for example. And what led me to a big focus of to the market, the business I founded and run, is that we should think about customization as so much more than just putting our name on a product. We should think about customization as a reflection of customizing our values into a product. So if I am, for example, a financial institution that wants to put my name on a product, and I have stated in my marketing or my corporate social responsibility that I care deeply about women's economic empowerment, then I should perhaps think about having those products that I'm having made with my name on it be made by women and by perhaps a women-owned and operated business, so that the products actually are an extension of the values I am espousing. That's truly custom to me.
Jane Mosbacher-Morris, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the author of Buy the Change You Want to See. It's about conscious consumerism, taking care of people elsewhere in the world through your buying choices. You can join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 and ask some questions about the process or share some stories about things you have changed in your buying habits. 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. You were talking about a bank as an example, but you have an example of your own to talk about with a huge bank, UBS. What did you get them to do?
You know, UBS essentially did what I just described. They care deeply about women's economic empowerment. They, like so many large corporations, have tremendous procurement budgets. The corporate gifting industry, which is the industry that has logoed tote bags, t-shirts, pins, notebooks, all of the things that we may buy for internal purposes and give away to clients or employees, is a huge industry in the United States. It is a $21 billion industry. And so I had the opportunity to sit down with UBS, discuss what was important to them from a value standpoint, then look at their procurement budget and recommend that they start sourcing tote bags for their conferences that were made by vulnerable women. So they truly did what I described earlier, where they were using that procurement budget to advance a corporate social responsibility value that they had espoused.
Is there much price sensitivity, either for institutional purchasers like UBS or for individuals? I mean, you know, after 15% or something, it's like, I'm just going to go to my old supplier. I don't care how they exploit their workers, et cetera.
That is also such a great question. So when it comes to, I think, branded product, specifically for businesses, I like to talk about total return on investment. So if I'm at a conference and I choose, for example, to buy, you know, very inexpensive plastic keychains that say my logo on it or the name of my business, that may only cost, let's call it a dollar. But the number of people who are going to keep that keychain versus throw that keychain away, is probably very low, or it may be sitting in someone's drawer. It's not going to have the intention that I want it to have, which is to remind somebody of my business and not only remind them, but hopefully have a positive association with my business. On the other hand, if I decide I'm going to spend $1.50 on cotton keychains made by women that describe my company's logo, have a little hang tag that talks about how the product was made, the likelihood that someone would read that story and choose to throw that away is much smaller. And so your ROI, I think, is much better if you're making slightly more thoughtful choices. Now, that example costs more, but it doesn't have to necessarily cost more.
Our guest again, Jane Mosbacher Morris, the author of Buy World a Better Place. Here's a call from Matt in Nasika Beach, Oregon. Welcome to The Exchange.
Yeah, hello.
Hi, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just curious if their mantra is purchase the change you want to see. Isn't that pretty much saying a country for the rich, by the rich? Money is the operating factor of the morals and processes that we're implementing.
In other words, you'd rather see a government effort rather than a consumer-based effort?
No. I like the idea, but it doesn't seem like it resonates. It's not going to work.
All right, so not enough people can buy into it. Let's move on from there and see if we can get a response from Jane. Thanks for that, Matt.
Well, I think, you know, regardless of whether we are a big fan of market-driven forces, of the idea of consumerism or not, the reality is that we all spend money every single day. And that could be on transportation, that could be on groceries, that could be on coffee. And even deciding that I want to support the local coffee shop is a decision that I'm making if supporting small businesses is of value to me. So it doesn't have to be, you know, that I'm supporting a cooperative in India. It can be that I choose to support the mom next door who is doing a jewelry business, or I want to support that mom and pop grocery store around the corner from my house.
And in fact, there are domestic bases for what you're talking about here, too. I mean, we've been talking about a lot of overseas operations, but you also talk about Homeboy Industries in L.A. in the book. Can you tell us about them?
Homeboy Industries is an incredible example of a social enterprise with many components that has been created to help address a population that has traditionally struggled. So Homeboy Industries was created by Father Greg, who is a Jesuit priest, who decided he wanted to create a safe place for people in Los Angeles that wanted to get out of the gang system. And so he has, over the last decade plus, created several businesses, everything from cafes to t-shirt imprinting businesses to train at-risk individuals who are exiting gangs so that they have a dignified job, they have an alternative source of income, and most importantly, they have a community.
So we're talking about these generally from the producer end. There's a lot in the book about convincing retailers to take on stuff that you have gotten from suppliers like Homeboy Industries, like Free Set, like Sari Bari. You got your foot at the door at Macy's in New York City, and it was a great success, and they ordered more. But the retail business itself is changing. For example, we're about to lose the Sears store in Medford. So, I mean, how do we have to adapt the things that we're shopping for ethically as the shopping itself changes?
Well, what's interesting to me about retailers is that they continue to struggle to compete against behemoths like Amazon. And ways that they are often able to compete against Amazon, because they struggle to compete on price, is on exclusivity of product and on a unique assortment of product. And so ultimately what I've found over the last several years is that more and more traditional legacy retailers have come to the market for help in sourcing and manufacturing unique goods that have a strong story that a consumer, particularly a millennial and Gen Z consumer, might be really interested in that couldn't be available on Amazon.
So let's talk about some specific places overseas in a little more depth. I want to focus on Haiti in particular and the Artisan Business Network you found there.
Haiti is an incredibly resilient country that has withstanded an incredible amount of tragedy. And because of that amount of tragedy, they have become incredibly resourceful, in my opinion. The artisans that To the Market works with and that I have spent time with on the ground truly turn trash into treasure. For example, there is an entire neighborhood that takes oil drums that are empty and discarded and takes those oil drums, pounds them into beautiful art, and sells them to places like Macy's. That some of this oil drum art was a part of the product that we sold into Macy's. Similarly, other Haitian artists are taking discarded cow horn and making beautiful jewelry. I mean, the list goes on and on. It is truly the queen of upcycling, in my opinion.
So when you're dealing with small suppliers in places like Haiti, though, I mean, do you get situations where you get a big order, but you're not sure if there are enough people and stuff to fill it?
What's interesting about retail trends as well is that retailers are wanting more products and fewer units of each. So that really works for a business model like To the Market, who is able to syndicate our supply chain and source from lots of different suppliers within a single purchase order. So we're often able to service a Macy's purchase order because the units that are now being ordered for retailers are often much less, but they want more variety of type of product.
So by syndicating the supply chain, it's almost like a bit of a co-op. You can have all these suppliers and people requesting the supplies together in this big conglomeration.
Absolutely. So many small and medium-sized businesses were previously unable to be a part of the supply chain of big businesses here in the United States because it used to be that the trend was you would order a handful of product types and a significantly high number of units of each type. And now that's shifted. And so smaller businesses are now able to participate because they're able to meet that quantity requested.
All right. So obviously it takes a bit of work. And I guess this brings us back to one of the major points for a consumer, certainly, is the idea that this is hard or this is going to cost me more money. How do you respond to those charges?
So on the question of costing more money, oftentimes being a conscious consumer doesn't have to cost a dime. It can be completely free. So a few of my favorite things to do, one is I travel quite a bit and I take with me two things. One, a reusable water bottle. So I'm able to refill my water wherever I am. I can skip expensive bottles of water at the airport, the train station, whatever it may be. I also take a reusable coffee cup with me everywhere. That means when I go to a coffee shop, they'll often give me a discount because I have brought in my own cup. Similarly, when I go to the grocery store, I buy in bulk as often as possible. So instead of buying, let's say, 5 bags of almonds, I will go to the bulk section and get a big bag of almonds. And that is reducing the amount of plastic packaging that's coming home with me.
So finally, Jane, I guess the question for some people is going to be, well, I don't really want to buy any more stuff. I got the stuff I need. Are there places that they should consider for donations directly?
Great question. We have an entire section in the book that we talk about specific charity recommendations for different types of donations for clothing. So, for example, we talk about a great organization called Becca's Closet, which is a nonprofit that focuses on gifting teens that may not be able to afford a prom dress, dresses that have been donated by women around the world. And that, for me, someone who has been in a number of weddings and has a number of bridesmaids' dresses that have collected dust in the back of my closet, having a special place to donate those dresses that specializes in that type of product means that that product will likely be re-gifted and reused.
The book is really fascinating stuff about how to make your changing buying patterns help other people in the world. The book is called Buy the Change You Want to See. Use your purchasing power to make the world a better place. Jane Mosbacher-Morris is the founder and CEO of To the Market and wrote the book with help from Wendy Paris. Jane, thanks for joining us on The Exchange today.
Thank you for having me.